You're listening to Sacks in the Basement, a production of the Broadcast Basement Limited, where every show is 30 minutes of good and comes from a basement bar on the south side of Chicago. Pull up a stool, pour a cold one, and join us right now for Sacks in the Basement. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found, and always at sacksinthebasement.com. I think that most White Sox fans can at least cling to the belief, whether right or wrong, that a first-time general manager wants to win baseball games.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't get to control the amount of money given to him by his cheap owner. It's going to take time for him to get things set up the way that he wants to set them up. But deep down, somewhere in there, Chris Getz wants to win baseball games.
Why would you become a general manager otherwise? I mean, just for the paycheck?
Right. So I'm going to believe he wants to win. And so I'm going to at least approach this with the idea of this general manager wants to win baseball games. I also think he's ahead of the curve a little bit when it comes to the way a team needs to be set up in this day and age. With the rash of injuries, especially to pitchers, I think that if I were dealing with an owner that doesn't give me a set payroll every year, because I really do believe this, Ed. I've become convinced of it. I look at where our payroll is compared to 2019. It's basically the same payroll. This guy looks at what he did the year before and then tells the general manager, this is what I'm giving you.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
And then unless you get a buzz that shows an increase in expected ticket sales, he's not going to go over that threshold. That's why you get these weird signings at the end of most White Sox off seasons, where it's like, I thought they were out of money, and then boom, they get another one. Because if you can generate interest, you might be able to move the old man. But I think he starts low, and then the GM has to get him excited enough that he opens up the wallet for an extra player or signing somebody for a little bit more money than what you have. Otherwise, you turn around, you're selling guys, like what Getz is doing right now. He's like Billy Bean in Moneyball. He's selling players.
He's literally selling guys. Every trade that he's made. Jose Rodriguez was just sold for money. Alex Spies sold off for money. Jake Cousins sold off for money. And it is. Jerry is absolutely looking at his bottom line from last year. He's doing some projections based on that as his baseline. The flip side of that is I'm not entirely convinced that if we were Wrigley Field South, if we were the 1980s Wrigley Field where the park is full every game and it's a party atmosphere, that Jerry would still open the books for certain guys, okay, and would allow Chris Getz the full, you know, foray of the billions of the Reinsdorf fortune. But I do honestly think that you have handcuffs on Chris Getz financially, and you're always going to have the handcuffs on Chris Getz financially. And he is, you're right, he's going to have to prove it every year. And he's going to have to be, now, you're not throwing platitudes, you're not saying he's a genius, but he's going to have to do some genius moves, because there is going to be a change in the way baseball operates. That rash of injuries to all these starting pitchers, okay, and we're talking about, you know, high-end guys, okay, Garrett Cole, Spencer Strider, Framber Valdez, you know, even low-end guys like Chase Silseth, okay, these are all guys that are hard-throwing, high RPM guys. These are guys that were definitely affected by the you know, the crackdown on the tacky stuff and making the ball sticky. These are all guys that are not necessarily, when you look at the history of the game, easily repeatable, right? They used to have, there's a few guys that could do this, and then the rest of the league was sort of, you know, their pitchers were good relative to other pitchers, but they were good because they knew how to do something well, right? They had a good changeup compared to their mediocre fastball, or they were able to move the ball around, or maybe they did have an exceptionally good curveball, but they weren't necessarily known for their heat. And I think you're going to go back and see some of that. So Getz is going to have to adjust, and he's going to have to use the resources within his means. But yes, I do think he wants to win. I don't think that a general manager, I don't think anybody works their way to that seat without wanting to build a legacy and sit there and say, I'm the guy who, you know, brought championship baseball back to the south side of Chicago. You cannot tell me that Kenny Williams, when he was the general manager, for all of the stupidity that we would talk about and complain about for some of his moves, I never questioned that Kenny Williams wanted to win.
No, he wanted to win. You want to win too when you're heading to the ballpark. Sweet transition. That's why you want to kick off your experience at Cork and Carry at the park in the shadow of the ballpark at 33rd and Princeton with an award-winning menu of burgers and ballpark favorites at an incredible price. Get the whole family out there and feed them before the game begins. Indoor, outdoor seating, which is great, especially when it starts to warm up here. After the game is over, win or lose, there is a party at the Cork. The extensive bar with a rotation of craft beers, familiar favorite spirits, and wines is there for you, as this is your home base for White Sox pregame, postgame, and in-game viewing parties. See more at corkandcarry.com. But you mentioned the injuries to all these pitchers across Major League Baseball. That's why I think they're ahead of the curve. Chris Getz has a lot of young, controllable pitching. He's got a Garrett Crochet. If this guy really is what he looks like early on, I don't care if they have to shut him down as the season gets late, because there's only so many innings they're going to be able to put on that arm this year. If he's real, they've got a starting pitcher. Eric Fetty's under control next year as well. Nastrini's on his way. Thorpe is likely on his way, and there's going to be other arms as well, and that makes an awful lot of sense. More pitchers, less throwers, a lot of control, a lot of young arms, because you're going to get these crazy injuries, and your owner isn't going to go out and give you the big contract needed to sign a lot of free agent pitchers. So that's what they're doing with the pitching, and they're working on the whole idea of defense in a White Sox way, which is great. You got to be able to field your position. But I want to look at what this team has right now that they can use in their lineup next year, what they have that is of value, and then what can easily be injected into the team and replaced. Because here's the thing that Chris Getz is going to have the kickoff next year. He's going to have a lot of money. Even if Jerry Reinsdorf gives him nothing more, let's say that the payroll stays right at $80 million again. He's going to start the season at 40. Because he's going to get rid of Moncada. Either Moncada's actually going to play well enough that somebody will take that stupid contract, or he's going to pay $5 million for him to go away. He's going to get rid of Eloy Jimenez because he's made out of glass. Nobody wants that deal. And trust me, the White Sox don't want that deal either. And for $3 million, he's going to go away. He's going to start with $40 million on the payroll, and he's going to have a young pitching staff. So then what does he really have, and what does he need? Well, he has an all-world center fielder that needs to work on not hurting his hip flexor so much, but let's just assume that we have him in center field, and he's definitely a guy that can bat anywhere, so he's in the top half of your lineup. We have him.
I actually think Luis Robert Jr. is done as a center fielder because of that hip. I think they're going to try and protect him. He's going to be a corner outfielder.
Oh, my God. I don't even want to talk about it. Now you're just hurting. Now you're just making me worry even more. How about this? Can we just assume he's in center for the sake of the argument? Just so I can just...
Yeah, we'll just say... Everybody.
I have an outfielder. I have an outfielder that's going to hit in a premier spot in my lineup. I know I have an outfielder that hits in a premier spot in my lineup. I know that I'm stuck with Andrew Benintendi, who is a bust to date. Okay, at $15 million a year, he made perfect sense based upon his statistics coming into the contract and his age, but he has not performed up to it. But guess what? There's going to be three more years at $15 million a year, and he isn't going anywhere. He's not a guy that I'm batting in the top half of my lineup, though, on a good team. So he's batting sixth or lower on my team. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
No, I absolutely agree. I think that's what Benintendi really is, and he's got a market level contract. Again, you know, we get caught up in the numbers on him, but he's got a market level contract for who he is. But I think he's a seventh or eighth hitter in a lineup.
So I've got a guy who's a linchpin in my lineup, and I've got a guy who's in the bottom part of my lineup. I'm also going to throw Andrew Vaughn in the same category as Andrew Benintendi. He's under control. He can use a glove and stand at first base.
Actually, he's pretty good at first base, I think.
But after 1,500 at-bats and multiple seasons, he's nothing more than a replacement-level player. I want to say that his career OPS is literally what the average would be for anybody that played during those several years. His OPS plus is a 100 even. He's not going out there and hitting bombs. He hits about 250. His wins above replacement is less than one per season. He is a replacement level player at first base, is not a middle of the order guy. And I think he is what he is. And if his contract was up, you'd be replacing him. But with so many other holes on the team, he likely is playing first base for you in 25, but he's at the bottom of your order, no higher than sixth in your order. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, we're talking about a guy, like you said, 1,528 regular season at-bats. He's got 53 home runs, which is not enough power output for a corner infielder in any era. And, yeah, career OPS of 727, which means he's not exactly a doubles machine either, okay? He's a career 254 hitter. You know, he can get on base for you. He can do some nice things. in the sixth hole protecting a much better hitter in the fifth spot, he's got some utility. And like I said, I honestly don't have a problem with his glove at first base. I think he does a nice job over there. And I think him and Benintendi hitting sixth and seventh next year is okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Other than that, I don't think I have anybody in this lineup that I'm excited about seeing in 2025, and I would hope I wouldn't see any of them. And that includes the red hot early on Gavin Sheets, unless he proves otherwise.
Gavin Sheets is in a prove it mode, but he's got to prove that he's not Andrew Vaughn from the left side. He's got to actually be the power hitter that he's expected to be. And he can still swing his way into a role on this team next year, but I don't know that I want to call him somebody that I would put in, you know, the fourth or fifth position in a lineup there.
No, I'm not relying on him in any way. He's not penciled in for me in any way whatsoever for next year. He may make the team. He may not make the team. Let's see what he does. Because again, he has a body of work just like Andrew Vaughn has. And if I'm going to pass judgment on Vaughn after all the at-bats he's had, I'm going to pass the same judgment on Gavin Sheets.
Yeah, you got to pass it on Gavin Sheets as well. And I would submit that there are some guys that we're about to talk about that fall more under prospect, even though they are in the lineup or on the team right now.
And as we press on with this exercise, let me remind you, when it comes time for mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, to stay out of assisted living and switch to a new age of life, Hyatt Home Medical Equipment is there for you. They will help you make it so they can get around on their own, live independently. Stair lifts, ramps, grab bars, lift chairs, even bathroom remodeling. And it's not going to cost you as much as you think it will, because they're going to work with your insurance and they have 0% financing for qualified individuals. If it's not that, but you're more about CPAP machines, a lot of people using them, unhappy with your vendor, switch and get supplies directly mailed to you from Hyatt Home Medical Equipment, plus test it all out in their brand new showroom. They also have the latest in continuous glucose monitors. Learn all about Hyatt Home Medical Equipment at HHME.com. You talk about guys that are already on the roster. There's not a lot that I haven't mentioned so far that I care about for even next year. Like maybe Corey Lee could be a secondary catcher, all right, on your team. James Fox talked about that. Here's a guy, somebody drafted him in the first round. They thought he could be a major league starter. He at worst is going to be a very good backup catcher. He's going to be part of your lineup next year, but I'm not even going to include him. I would say after those three names that I put in there, out of nine spots in a batting order, there's two more names that are going to fall in there at the bottom of the order. Let's say it's probably your catcher battery. What if Edgar Caro's ready by the start of the season, or it's Corey Lee and somebody else? Let's just put that guy at the bottom. All right. And there's going to be some position player that is more for their defense than for their hitting. And that's the bottom four spots in your lineup.
Do you think that's Dominic Fletcher?
It could be. Let's say it's Dominic Fletcher.
Or Zach DeLoach.
Could be him too. Let's put that in. But they're not somebody who's going to be hitting in the top five spots.
No, unless they prove otherwise.
Okay,
at some point this year.
So what I pointed out to you at this point is that you've got a bottom of a lineup. You've got a bottom of a lineup, and you've got Luis Robert Jr.
Not even a power bottom. You've just got a bottom.
So you need four major league good top half of the order hitters added to your team for 2025. And that's the focus that I believe that Chris Getz should have. He's got the young pitching staff. He's got a few guys that are going to kind of fill in at the bottom. But the way, and James Fox kind of got this in my head when you listened to the show that was on before this one. If you listened to our last episode, the idea that it's going to be at $40 million and that you really should be going out and buying hitting, because when you look at the free agent market over the last couple of years, professional hitters abound, and most of them had to wait for most of the offseason, late into the offseason, to take money that is easily affordable by a White Sox team that, even if Chris Getz is given the same budget next year, he's going to have $40 million to play with. He can go out and he can sign a couple of guys. So let's say Colson Montgomery shows up, and that's what you really need. You need him to show up, and you need him to be good enough in the second half of this year. And that's why I think he should be up the second half of this year, at least, because if he's ready, don't rush him, but if he's ready, get him up here, because he's going to be one of those five guys in the top half of your order, and you want to make sure he's ready to fill that role. You're going to go out and you're going to purchase a leadoff hitter, and you're going to go out and purchase two more hitters on this team. And if you are able to go do that, Ed, if you are able to go out and purchase three hitters out of the free agent class, Colson Montgomery and Luis Robert Jr., and that's your top five in your batting order, and you have your young pitching, this is a very different team. This isn't a World Series team, but it's not a team that gets off to this terrible start. I mean, you got to get rid of the manager too, but I mean, like this, that's where I think the flip is. That's the point that I've been trying to get to here. There's a flip here of this team. It's not in the pitching, and it's not in role players and little things that you do at the bottom. You have that. Unfortunately, you have guys like Vaughn and Benintendi trying to play bigger roles that they're not suited for. What you're going to need to do is go out and purchase, essentially, the top half of your order next year with all of the money that's coming off of the books. And every decision you make should be based off of that game plan, whether it be how you're going to handle the Montgomery promotion, to whether or not you make any kind of trade during the season, to how you're going to use your funds when you go into the offseason. It's all about purchasing bats.
Right. And you, when we looked at the free agent market this offseason, you know, like you said, there was a lot of top heaviness. There was a lot of bats out there, though. There were guys that could have fit the bill if you wanted them to. And next year, you can actually look and start to identify some names that would go really nicely on this team. They're not necessarily young guys, okay? They're not necessarily making this a rebuild team, okay? But there are possibilities, for example, in the middle infield, because unless the Yankees extend him, Gleyber Torres will hit free agency, right? Willy Adames is not a bad shortstop. He's not a bad offensive player for Milwaukee. He's a decent option at shortstop if you decide Colson Montgomery isn't going to play short and he's going to play third.
I think he's going to play short, though. They're going to make him a shortstop.
I do, too. I do, too. But I do think that there comes a point in roster construction where you do start to look at it. And the Orioles are kind of doing this, too, because half their prospect list was middle infielders, where you do start to sit there and say, okay, you know, maybe this guy isn't going to be the shortstop that he was drafted to be. Maybe he's going to be something else because we have an opportunity here to fill that position with somebody who we like better than, for example, a third baseman that's on the market. Okay. So I'm envisioning that Colson Montgomery, yes, he will be the shortstop of the Chicago White Sox. But I also am willing to bet that if Chris Getz has an opportunity to fill that role with either an established major leaguer or another major league ready prospect who profiles similar to Colson Montgomery, that one of those two guys is not going to be a shortstop, even though that's what they were brought up to be. And I don't think shortstop in this particular situation for the White Sox is one where it's like, if you're not the shortstop, you're the second baseman, because they are going to have to fill third base too. And so you have those, I think they're going to be looking for defensive flexibility in that regard too, right? And guys that they can put maybe into a different position. And you're not going to run into Tim Anderson will only ever play shortstop for this team. You're going to have to run into a guy that's sitting there going like, yeah, I've been a shortstop or I've been a third baseman. I'm willing to move around. Or a guy like Ha-Seong Kim. I don't know if you really want him on your team, but by way of example of a guy that plays all over the place and he'll probably just do whatever you ask him to do. Right. Well,
there's a lot of bats at first base. So your DH, I think, is coming from that position just realistically. Which again, yes. And you can sign that guy for a couple of years because Andrew Vaughn ain't blocking anybody. If you decide you need flexibility the next year and you want to add another bat and then you need that guy to move over and play first, Andrew Vaughn ain't blocking anybody with what he provides to this team. So, I mean, like, I think that they're going to add a big bat, I think, from the class of Goldschmidt and Pete Alonso and Hoskins and Rizzo and Josh Bell and Tellez and, like, Christian Walker out there. They're going to find a bat, I would think.
Yeah, of those guys, who would you want?
I don't know. I'm just reading off names at this point. I'm not diving into stats. Who knows what they're going to be this year?
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? Like, who knows? It's 162 games. We want the season to be over, right? Like, we want to just hit the simulation button and just get the 2025.
We can fast forward this team very easily right now.
Right. But I mean, but the point that I'm trying to make is this. Like, think of the White Sox this year, because this is how I'm thinking of the White Sox. I'm thinking of the White Sox as, all right, one of the best stories that I'm following all year long is the starting pitching. How much young starting pitching gets here and shows they can do it. If Garrett Crochet finishes the year, even if they have to shut him down at some point because of all the innings, but I sit there and say, okay, tack on another 40 innings, look at that performance, that's a top-end rotation guy, I'm happy. If I see a Nastrini get here, if I see a Thorpe get here, if I start seeing some of this pitching show up and it's good, I'm happy. Like I'm looking for what parts of the rotation, how much of the rotation for 2025 are we already going to have in place? And I think that the hope is a good portion of it is in place. That, I mean, with Crochet and Fetty and Nastrini and Thorpe hopefully kind of getting here and figuring it out, you could have 4 out of 5 already slotted the go, and you'll see these positive things. That's like been the one thing. Like, look, they're losing games, but starting pitching, especially the second time through, has been relatively good. And I think they have a lot of talent that they've been able to identify with the pitching that they put into the rotation. I think when we get to the end of the year, we're going to sit there and say they actually are not having a problem finding 5 arms in their rotation and keeping depth, which was always a problem. So I think that they're solving that problem right now. So that's the one storyline I'm really watching. The other thing is Colson Montgomery. When is he ready? When does he arrive? And by the end of the year, can I slot him in one of those top 5 spots with Luis Robert Jr.? Because if I can't do that, we're in big trouble next year.
Right. If he comes up and he's Andrew Vaughn,
then that's a problem.
And the bat doesn't translate.
If he's Gordon Beckham, that's what I worry about. Every time I have a prospect, I remember Gordon Beckham's first game was getting standing ovations. He never turned out to what they kept telling you he was going to be, right? Canerico was pushing the hype. He's like, oh, he's going to be a star. And, you know, he's a nice guy, it seems like. I'd love to have him on the show. But even he would have to admit that he never turned out to what he was hyped to be.
Oh, I think, and Gordon's welcome to come on and talk to us about this, but I think I've actually read and heard him say that as much. And he did. He came out and looked like he had that potential still. But the problem is that the White Sox also never really developed him fully. Okay. And that's, I think, honestly, what's gone on with Andrew Vaughn is that Vaughn was never really given a chance to develop a personality as a hitter, if that makes sense. And Gordon Beckham was sort of forced into, well, you're going to be the star kid. You're going to be the straw that stirs the drink. That was Adam Eaton. But, you're going to be the guy, and Andrew Vaughn, you're going to be the guy. Well, what does that mean? Okay. So as Getz is looking at this, obviously he's going to have to find a source of home runs beyond Luis Robert Jr. He's going to have to find some on base, right? He's going to have to find some guys that can get on and be driven home by your Luis Robert Juniors. The question for an Andrew Vaughn is, are you a power hitter or are you a high average hitter? You can't reasonably be both. And at this point, you've proven that you're not capable of both. Gordon Beckham was much the same thing. For Colson Montgomery, what I'm going to be looking for is, you know, you're compared Colson to Corey Seager, who is a little bit of both. Are you really that good? And if you're not, have the White Sox given you an opportunity to find what you're good at and then exploit it? And that's also where, if you're going to not have the high payroll, if you're not going to be able to sit there and look at the list of free agents and just say, I'm going to be able to throw $20 million at this guy and then another $15 million at this guy and, you know, $25 million at this guy because that's only 3 guys and that's more than $40 million. Even I can do that math. Then you're going to have to sit there and say, okay, where can we find some cheap power because that's what's lacking, all right? Where can we find some cheap on-base percentage and base stealing because that we need that at the top of the lineup. Maybe you're still going a little old school with that. Or where can we find just a competent major league bat that's not Robbie Grossman or Kevin Pillar, like somebody who legitimately can go in and do it every day, or isn't somebody like Andrew Benintendi, who I also think is a guy that falls into that category of never really given a chance to develop his identity. And that's why he spent the offseason eating extra pasta thinking he was going to be a home run hitter when he's never been that, as opposed to just the guy who went out and played ball when he was with the Red Sox. Or even Dominic Fletcher, I think, is going through that right now, where I don't know what he thinks he's supposed to be, but the savior of the White Sox isn't it. He's supposed to just go out and play ball and build on whatever his strength is. So some of this is going to be development, and some of it is going to be sitting there saying, as you're getting these established major leaguers, this is a guy that we can exploit for this thing that we need in the top half of our lineup. So it might be a couple of guys that all they do is thump and they hit legitimate home runs. It's a Pete Alonso guy with middling to low batting average, but you know he's good for 40 and he might be good for 50 if he's on it, right? And that guy's going to be sitting there backing up Luis Robert Jr. Or you might be looking a little bit more at the bargain barrel level first baseman because there's some guys there that can thump like that too on the cheap. They're just not good for 50. They might be good for 30. but 30 might be all you really want out of that. So there's a lot to look for when you're trying to build like this, but I do think you're right that this is where the flip happens, and then Getz has to maintain. He's got to continue to stockpile cheap arms as time goes on, which means a name that you've conspicuously not mentioned at all in Mike Soroka, who is an asset here that could be a very valuable one.
Yeah, but you don't have him signed next year, so you got to do that. I don't want to assume anybody that isn't signed. So you're right. I think he should be here. I think I'm Chris Getz and I continue to see him performing, I'm starting to try to figure out, well, can I get him, and can I get him at a good price now?
Oh, that's the key, though.
Yeah.
That's the key is, can you get him at a good price? Because if he's going to cost a premium, if I'm Chris Getz, even though Mike Soroka might be a winning pitcher,
you're going to let him go because you need to go buy hitting.
And I might let him go this year to try and find more of that hitting or to bring back more of a stockpile of arms.
Support Sox in the Basement by making your next wager with one of our preferred sports books. We've got some of the best offers out there. Heck, I'm going to say it. The best offers out there are at SoxInTheBasement.com. Also, check out our brand new vouch store supporting small business. Everything from Camp Craft Cocktails, where you can become an expert bartender at your own home bar, or supporting disabled veterans and purchasing some Split Rock coffee. There's more than just the podcast at SoxInTheBasement.com. Before we get out of here, I know they won a game on Tuesday night because they weren't going to lose all of their games. And there was some offense and there was some pitching in some right spots. But generally, they've had an issue scoring runs. And I have kind of an old school idea that I want to run by you here at the end of the show, if you'll indulge me. Maybe I'm a crackpot, but will you indulge me?
Please, by all means.
All right, here's the thing. Let's just break it down in the simplest of terms. This entire team is a 250 hitting team.
Right.
Everybody on this team's basically got a 1-in-4 chance, if they're lucky, of getting a hit. Not that Robert Jr. is out there and Jimenez. Nobody's running into home runs on a regular basis. And most of these guys, if not all of them, are basically 250 hitters. So they're all going to get up there and they're going to have a 1 out of 4 chance of getting a hit. They may draw a walk, but they may also hit into a ground ball that could cause a double play. In fact, I would say you also have a 1 out of 4 chance of,
like Andrew Vaughn, the king of grounding into double plays, right, in clutch situations.
Of hitting into a double play. So if everybody basically has got about a 1 out of 4 chance of getting a hit, and a 1 out of 4 chance when they come to the plate of grounding into a potential double play. And you know this as a manager. When your leadoff guy gets on, and I know this is going to drive the new school kids crazy, I would contend if you get your leadoff guy on and you've got a lineup like this, and I think Guillen touched on this a little bit with running a lot more, like he thinks you should be running, trying to make something happen. But if you've got the next three guys up and they all have got a 1 out of 4 chance and a guy standing on first base, you need 2 hits really to get him in. You're not normally going to get him in with 1. What are the odds that's going to work out for you before you get the 3rd out? Not very good, which is why we're seeing all these games where they have like 11 or 12 hits and they're not getting any runs in because they're spread out over the 9 innings and they can't string together multiple hits in a single inning because they're a 250 hitting team. So I would go back to the old school theory that if you bunt a man over and you sacrifice the out, you increase your odds. Because now with 1 out and the runner in scoring position only needing to get 1 hit instead of 2 with a 250 hitting team, you odds on have a greater chance that one of those two guys is going to get that hit. It's not going to happen every inning. You're going to have that guy stranded out there a couple of times. But you may knock in a run or two. You may score 3 instead of scoring 1. You may score 2 instead of scoring none. It just seems to me like we're still going up there acting like, well, we don't want to give up the out and we don't want to try to advance the runner and we don't want to try to steal because somebody's going to hit a home run with an entire team of guys that don't hit home runs. Like, you can't manage station to station baseball and wait for somebody to get a hold of one when you got a bunch of 250 hitting baseball players that are going to get 15 home runs this year over 162.
No, you're not nuts.
So what is this boob on the bench doing? Because he doesn't know what he's doing out there right now. He has no clue what he's doing. Like, we're talking about what you need for 2025. You definitely need a new manager because this guy can't figure that out.
that's all you ask a manager to do in game situations is put guys in the situation where they're going to succeed and do what you can with the resources you have to try and generate runs or try and prevent runs, if you're talking defensively. And you're right. Station-to-station baseball on a team that is not going to hit home runs. I'm looking up and down the lineup. I'm looking up and down. There's nobody on this team right now who is active who has had more than 20 home runs in a season, except for, I think, Paul DeJong, but he's so many years removed from that I can't even count him anymore because it seems like a different Paul DeJong, and this is pod person Paul DeJong that took over for him at one point that could still play shortstop but never learned how to hit. And you, if you're going to have that type of a lineup, I would much rather watch them run themselves out of innings than ground into double plays. I would much rather watch them bunt a guy over and leave a guy stranded because the next fly ball that went out to the outfield was a little too shallow than to not have an opportunity to get him past second base. Absolutely, if you're not going to have a team full of guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark, you've got to run, you've got to generate offense, you've got to do something. And so far, Pedro has shown us, you know, we'll go back to right at the beginning of the season where he pinched runs for Andrew Vaughn with Kevin Pillar, and Kevin Pillar is standing there like they were erecting a statue of him outside of first base as opposed to even trying to steal the base. Yeah, Pedro doesn't get what he has on this team. He is managing by some sort of a written book, and that book probably shouldn't even, it's not even Moneyball. He's managing by like Earl Weaver's book from the 1980s Orioles.
Earl Weaver, though, knew what he was doing much more than Pedro Grifol. Listen, as we're talking about it, I've just seen a quote from a Joe Cowley article in the Sun-Times where he says, and quote, perfect way to end the show and perfect timing for this discussion, because as you're talking, I'm looking at things going on. This is from the article, quote, a source recently said that Reinsdorf, who is also the chairman of the White Sox, knew that manager Pedro Grifol had put in a fireable season by midsummer of 2023, but he wanted to wait at least a year so the dead money wasn't as big a hit. Pedro's gone, folks. It's just a matter of time because your owner is too cheap to pay him to sit at home.
There's the bottom line. The biggest hitter on the White Sox roster is Pedro Grifol's dead cap money.
Socks in the basement. Socks in the basement. Socks in the basement.
Socks in the basement. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found, and always on socksinthebasement.com.